Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am joined by Connor.
Hello.
And I'm Josh. And what we're going to be talking about today is the morality of abortion. And with abortion being a widely debated issue in the United States currently, we thought it'd be worthwhile to discuss all of the surrounding moral questions. And that's not necessarily ones that are directly related to it, but there are lots of tangential questions as well. Like, what is the worth of a human life and things like that, where specific people may not agree with the framing of it, but they're still important topics to touch on if you want to cover the moral questions comprehensively. And I think that actually, although it's going to be centered on abortion, there are lots of interesting moral questions that we're going to be addressing here that apply to lots of other areas outside of it as well. So if you've already made up your mind, you're still not going to miss out on anything, I don't think.
Well, it's very valid as well to even if you've ossified your side, to engage with this kind of content, because when you meet people who are very different to you, you become better armed against every argument that is against your position.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I want to do this, is that we're not trying to convince you of our various positions, but our hope is that this discussion helps you to articulate your position and consider things that you might not have otherwise, so you can have a stronger argument behind you yourself. So, first of all, let's have a look at the situation in the United States that has triggered this conversation to come up again in the first place. Well, for a start, according to the Postmillennial, 60% of abortion clinics have shut down in red states with pro-life laws after Roe has been overturned. So I'm quite surprised, actually, that it's so few in these red states. If they're serious about banning abortion, wouldn't you think it'd be 100%, not 60%? But I suppose they've got to start somewhere.
Well, some of the clinics, I mean, obviously we've seen from Planned Parenthood's leaked internal documents that they claim that abortions are only a fraction of what they provide, but it's because they're counting when you go for an abortion, each stage is a different service. So if they give you an ultrasound, they count it as a service. They give you contraception, count it as a service. I would imagine some of the Planned Parenthoods have become more consolidated, and obviously some of the non-Planned Parenthood abortion clinics as well have become consolidated into like maternity care providers. And I guarantee some are still conducting abortions outside the law, because we have seen that there are activist blue judges. For example, in the Alex Jones trial, she granted a moratorium, injunction against Planned Parenthood from being sued by Texas pro-life charities because they were still doing abortions after the heartbeat bill had passed last year, long before Roe v. Wade came into effect. And so I think some of them, the fact they haven't been closed down yet is because some of them are probably still operating under the radar and just haven't been caught yet.
Well, there's also DeSantis evicting that, was it?
Prosecutor.
Yes. Prosecutor, yeah.
Because he refused to comply mainly with the gender stuff, but I wouldn't be surprised if abortion was snuck in as well.
I was under the impression that it was involved as well, but I'm not entirely sure. So
I think it was to do with transitioning kids, because he wasn't he wasn't prosecuting people that were giving kids hormone blockers, basically.
Oof.
Yes.
So here is a Pew Research poll of American public opinion about abortion. This was in May 6th of 2022. So it's not entirely recent, but it's recent enough that you can get a good picture of the mood. So here we have, from left to right, morally wrong in all cases, all the way to abortion is not a moral issue, which surely it is.
Yeah.
No matter which side
actually
you're looking at it.
The most incorrect position on there is that complete amorality on abortion is impossible, because you are contesting with the definition of not only life, but what is classified as human versus what are classified as property, which you can dispense with at your convenience. And so the idea that there's no morality involved in the argument, no matter which level you land on it, and I'm sure we're going to outline our position shortly, but that is asinine.
Mm-hmm. So if we have a look at particularly the partisan split between Republican and Democrat, there's clear partisan lines there. Morally wrong in most cases is 48% for Republicans. Morally wrong in all cases, 20%, whereas the Democrats, morally wrong in all cases is a mere 6%, and morally wrong in most cases, 23%. And then morally acceptable in most cases is 32% for the Dems and 16% for Republicans. And then morally acceptable in all cases, I don't know how they snuck into the Republican Party, but they're 3%. Mm-hmm. And Democrats, it's 11%.
Well, that's the Mitt Romney Republicans who are morally acceptable in all cases, because Mitt Romney came out as squarely pro-choice despite being a former Mormon. The most interesting to me is actually the Catholic line. Mm. And that shouldn't be surprising, I suppose, because Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi define themselves as Catholic, despite being abortion up until birth advocates in recent years. But only 16% in all cases, only 38% in most cases, acceptable in most cases is 24%, morally acceptable in all cases 4%, and not a moral issue is 17%. How can you be a Catholic and not regard abortion as a moral issue on the definition of life? That's...
I was quite surprised at the prevalence of acceptance amongst religious groups here. It was, I thought it would have been a lot more towards the morally wrong in all cases side of things.
I suppose, though, obviously with your background in decision-making discrepancy and cognitive miserliness, etc., my background in philosophy, the postmodernists and psychologists might converge on the fact that a lot of people will label themselves as a particular ideology, but will dispense with it as and when is convenient to service their own power and ambition. Well, and so you can label yourself as that, as a tribal marker or as a cultural identifier, or as saying, aren't I a good person because I believe in the good book? And then when rubber hits the road, you abandon your morality and make sure it's very performative.
I think that's the dominant Christian position in Britain, for example.
Yeah, where, unfortunately so.
Well, I don't know.
What do you mean, I don't know?
I think that I'm not going to get into the religion debate. I'm just being...
Well, no, I think if you profess to believe something, you authentically believe it.
Well, yes. I believe that if you have principles, you should stand by them.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, obviously, to get back to the discussion we're going to have, obviously it's a contentious issue and there are lots of difficult questions. So if there's something we miss, please don't get annoyed at us. We're just talking about our opinions and there's no need to get annoyed at us, which I know will happen.
Yeah.
So it's also worth pointing out that me and Connor view the issue slightly differently. So Connor, you've said that you describe yourself as pro-life.
Yeah, I would just say abortion is a moral evil. And even though... things like the heartbeat bill are probably the most objective standpoint to make a law, for example, when you can detect a heartbeat via an ultrasound, and so you can set that determination. At the same time, the questions I have is, okay, is a baby at all stages of conception human? Yes. Is it innocent? Yes. Is it alive? Yes. And so because you can't kill an innocent human life from conception, abortion is morally wrong.
Okay, well, I don't necessarily agree with that, but we're going to talk through it. So my position is more of a libertarian position that it should ideally be up to an individual's own conscience to decide. However, I'm not going to go so far as to say, they should be allowed to do whatever. I think that there is a place for the state to enforce something here. And I think where the state should step in is in enforcing this safe, legal and rare principle. And I have a very conservative limit on the number of weeks in which they can have an abortion, which I think is actually, when looking at the laws worldwide, would put me as one of the most conservative.
Have we got time to unpack this before we
go through some more?
So the safe, legal and rare, I suppose, mantra is nonsensical.
Mm-hmm.
It's safe for who? Because it certainly isn't safe for the baby being killed.
Well, it's meant to be safe for the mother, right?
Yes, but it's not safe for the baby. So therefore, it's self-contradictory because you can't have the fundamental right to life being violated and claim it's safe.
But the point of it is that it's a phrase where you can understand the underlying position. The phrase itself isn't necessarily the principle. It represents a principle, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't, genuinely. I didn't. That was sort of a circular definition there, I think.
Okay. But it's like a shorthand for saying a belief, but it's not necessarily a good summary of your belief, if you know what I mean. It's something that you can say and people understand what you mean, but it's not necessarily the best way to articulate your position.
Yeah, but at least this is, and this is why I'm going to excoriate, for example, those that say it's not a moral issue, almost more, I mean, they're not as morally reprehensible, but they are dumber than the abortion advocates who say it's all right in all cases. Because if you put the legal prescription is not moral, so legality and morality don't necessarily follow. The safety position is not safe for the baby, and it's not always safe for the mother either, because it can cause sterility, etc., even in modern abortions. And the rarity is the least nonsensical position, because when you negotiate rarity, you're saying, of course, that you're more on the conservative side legally than a lot of other positions, but you don't have an objective standpoint in which to anchor your morality. And so you're just negotiating the terms. We'll go through it, but I think... unless you drill it down, and this is why I think it would be the catalyst eventually for another American Civil War, because either it's a baby at all stages is up to the mother's convenience and will to dispense with, because it is the mother's property and human life is contingent on consent rather than being objective to human life, or it's an objective human life, it's human, it's alive, it's done nothing wrong, and therefore at all stages you can't kill it. And to say rare, it puts a subjective, arbitrary prescription on it.
But I think at the heart of this is the moral question, which we're going to have to get on a little bit later, of what is a human life?
Yes.
What worth does a human life have? Like, these sorts of moral questions that we will get onto in a second.
Yes.
But first, I want to kind of, first of all, clarify that I think we both are against the rules in California that they more or less have abortion up until the point of birth, which is baby murder. That's obvious to me.
Same in New York. Obviously, in West Virginia, prior to Governor Youngkin's election, you had Governor Ralph Northam and Delegate Kathy Tran, who were saying during dilation, even possibly after birth, abortion in the cases of severe fetal deformity, that you can kill the baby as it's lying on the operating table. You also have the Born Life Protection Act being shot down by all of the Democrat senators who were running as presidential candidates in 2020. And that means that in Minnesota, for example, some babies have survived abortion have just been left to die suffocating on an operating table, which is harrowing. And then
that is horrific. Yeah.
The last thing I would say is, of all people, Ann Coulter wrote an interesting piece in Breitbart just after Roe v. Wade was overturned. And obviously we've had lots of pink-haired feminists who nobody would shag anyway, screeching about how their abortion rights being taken away. All of these people live in blue cities. The interesting thing is it only bars Roe v. Wade about 1/3 of abortions from happening, if that. So it's only about 100,000 women who won't have abortion access because they're in red states. Mm-hmm. The majority of abortions will still go ahead on the state level, because each state determines their own abortion law. And that's why I think, and I got a lot of flack for this, but the pro-life position must be a federal abortion ban, because you can't have baby murder happening next door to you and not
being
morally abide by it.
Being of the political inclination that I am, I feel like any federal solution to this problem is not the answer. I think that it should be for the states to decide, and it ultimately for the laws to be consistent with the US Constitution, it's got to be a state's rights issue first and foremost.
Well, murder on a federal level is prosecuted, especially if it happens across states. So if abortion is indistinguishable from murder, and that is my position, then it is intolerable. Same as slavery, for example.
But isn't that just the mirror image of the progressive view that you've got to use the state to force people to have abortions?
No.
As in, not force them, as in make them go into the clinic, but as
well,
in... I'm sure they would try and do that.
Yeah.
But to make the states allow for these facilities to exist in their states?
No, because... the state acts as a watchman, it acts as a safeguard against rights violations, and there is no greater rights violation than the right to life. So if it's the same as a state having a prohibition against murder, it's just one happens inside the womb, one happens outside.
Okay. So I'm going to move on to some of the framing of the debate. So there are some that see any attempt to restrict abortion as a violation to make their own decisions about their body, but this misses the point about the actual debate being had. If it can be regarded as a baby, therefore a human life, you have an obligation to protect it and not take it. I think where me and you might differ on that is, when does it become a baby? I think, as you've alluded to before, you say at conception.
Well, it doesn't necessarily become a baby at conception.
But it becomes a life.
Yeah, but it's alive and it's human.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I'll get into it in a second, but let's have a look at an assortment of countries to see where the actual legal standpoints are around the world. So the laws around Europe, I'm going to go from the most conservative to the least. So Liechtenstein has a total ban. However, it is allowed if a woman is a victim of sexual violence, is underage, or if it would damage her health. Malta has a complete ban as well, except in the case of health complications, and the doctors must attempt to save both the mother and child. And Poland has a complete ban as well, except in the case of rape or risk of health to the mother. So these are the countries in Europe in particular that have the strictest laws. And then it moves on to 10-week. So what that means is that after 10 weeks, you can't have an abortion. And that is Croatia, Portugal. And Portugal does allow later term if the fetus has medical issues or there's a risk to health of the mother. And Slovenia, 11 weeks is Estonia. 12 weeks is Bulgaria, Cyprus, the Czech Republic, Denmark, Finland, Germany, which requires advice from a doctor at least 3 days before, by the way, which is an interesting caveat to have because that's very unique to Germany. Greece, Hungary, Ireland, Italy, Latvia, Lithuania, Luxembourg, Norway, Slovakia, Switzerland. And then moving on to 13 weeks, Austria, which allows later term if there is medical issue with the fetus or risk of health to the mother, which is something that a lot of countries have a caveat for. 14 weeks, France, Romania, Spain. 18 weeks, Sweden. 24 weeks, the Netherlands and the United Kingdom. So we are on the most liberal end of this, along with the Netherlands, in all of Europe.
Yeah.
And then other countries, Australia is, depending on which state you're in within Australia, between 16 and 24 weeks. Canada, it is 23 weeks and 6 days, just to be difficult, basically 24 weeks. New Zealand is 20 weeks. Mexico is 13 weeks. In Saudi Arabia, abortion is legal in cases of risk to the woman's life, fetal impairment, or to protect her physical and mental health.
Or if it's female, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately.
In some boroughs in London, they did actually have to ban gender ultrasound reveal screenings because they were having such a high rate of when it was revealed that they were going to have a daughter, abortion would just be booked in right away.
I wonder if it was Islamic
it was.
People.
Yeah,
yes, it was. Yeah. Of course it was.
Yeah.
And in China, some states say around 14 weeks. So it varies state by state, a bit like Australia, which is another province of China. No,
yes, at this point, unfortunately.
So yeah, there's a very wide gulf between some countries in Europe and others and the rest of the world. So a lot of the Anglosphere have very, I don't really want to call them liberal.
Lax.
Lax, I think is the right term.
Permissive, yeah.
Yeah, they've got very lax laws on abortion and it seems very out of keeping, is that the right way of putting it? But it seems very dissimilar to the rest of the world.
I think it's because we uniquely are a place in which nihilism has set hold. So after the scientific revolution and then the Enlightenment, we've become something what Dennis Prager would call a cut flower culture. And just to cut off any criticisms of the past, I'm not going to make any religious arguments for my abortion position, mainly because I was very much against abortion before I sort of started recovering from agnosticism. So that's got nothing to do with it for me. But it is fair to say Christianity set us on the path of having objective universal moral norms, the inviolability of human life, rather than just predicating on one's tribe, it's predicated on self-association, meaning that if you enter the fold and play by the same moral game, that you're under the same moral consideration, you are under the Christian jurisdiction. And also it then set us on the path of the scientific revolution. No shock that, for example, Isaac Newton was himself a devout Christian. And so when we've unmoored ourselves from that anchoring, when we've removed the objective hook of God, of a progenitor, a creator who knew us in the womb, etc., then everything becomes permissible. And we're just on this long march, this historicist arc bending towards social justice that says that we should liberate the will from social, biological, and material constraints. And so one of those, the liberation of social obligation, you can see this in Brave New World, for example, is abortion on tap, on demand, without any moral limitations. And we are definitely getting there. And it's gotten to the point in the UK, for example, of where the 24-week is utterly arbitrary. But even Christians, Catholics like Jacob Rees-Mogg, has no particular appetite to really push for it in Parliament because he sees it as politically toxic. I was told, for example, by a conservative anti-racism advocate that I worked with, that it was very un-English to be against abortion. And it's because we have this sort of complacent culture of where it's become an unquestionable moral axiom of liberated, liberal life. But we'd never question, okay, where do these roots of liberalism, of individual liberty, come from? Yes, they come from Christianity. But also we don't follow through on the moral conclusions of, okay, if we have the liberation, if we're looking for the liberation of our will to maximize our autonomy, well, that autonomy is contingent on life. And if the fundamental right is to life, then that should extend to the least able to protect and defend themselves, the most deserving of our moral consideration, the innocent and the unborn. And so it's strange how that's become unquestioned, but it's a symptom of a completely amoral culture that tips into immorality.
I don't necessarily disagree with some of that. However, I think that the focus on religious values there, I think that when there are vast upheavals in social attitudes, I think it takes a long time for people to pick up the slack and correct these sorts of things.
Yeah.
And I think that there are plenty of secular people that might agree with the more religious line. It's not necessarily that you need religion per se. It's more that you need a culture that puts a large amount of emphasis on pursuing moral aims.
Yes, exactly.
And I find it interesting that my upbringing couldn't have been more secular if I wanted to. Basically, my only contact with religion was in school.
Yeah.
And yet, on most issues, we agree, despite you being a Catholic and one that actually is, actually sticking to the beliefs?
As best I can. I mean, I suppose, again, going sort of to your psychological background, my high openness means that I've always been a little bit rebellious in life and I'm not good with the rules. So I had this arc of being brought up religious but not really getting it, going from a very nihilistic phase where I was kind of apathetic on abortion, but it was only because I didn't believe there was any innate value in human life, mainly because I didn't believe there was much innate value in my own life, just because a lot of things were going on, but I won't get into that. And then as I came back to conservatism specifically, I was interrogating philosophies and developed an appreciation on a meta-mythological level, like Jordan Peterson does, for things like the Christian tradition. And then I made the Nick Dixon leap into, well, why don't you just believe it then, you idiot? And it seems to be working. So again, as you said, you don't need a religious society. And this is exactly what was in the constitutional dissent against Roe v. Wade that got overturned. There was no appeal to Christian morality in any of those arguments. It was just, is it a human innocent life? Is it inviolable? Yes. And so you need a set of objective moral axioms rather than this emphasis on liberating your will from the constraints which stop you maximizing hedonic pleasure. And a family is definitely something to tell you to grow up and stop partying. And that's what the abortion industry definitely hates. That's why they're, you know, it's being pushed by the New York urban types who live in a very nice studio apartment, I'm sure, but will leave no legacy behind except unfunny comedy.
So what we've got on screen now is a picture of the United States as of, I think, the 6th of August. And in black are the states where abortion is illegal. And I think in the sort of ready colour, it's illegal after the embryonic stage. And then it goes to blue and then to green. And green is the one where it's basically anything goes, which, yeah. You get a picture of the United States where sort of middle south. I don't know whether people in the United States ever use that phrase, but Texas and the sort of, I don't know what to call them, the bayou states, I don't know. But the southern coast, more or less, are the only ones where they've taken a strong line against abortion.
And yeah, many of them had trigger laws, that's why.
So that is the current state in the United States. So that is where we are in the world, in the debate. It seems to me that the sort of permissive side, as you put it, is certainly winning across the world. Although they are it's not really a winning or losing situation. That's not a fair way of framing it.
But I think we'll come on to that later. I think currently the amoral legal prescriptions on abortion exist, but I think as an intergenerational project, this will be treated the same way as slavery, but for different reasons. Slavery was partially abolished because of material considerations. I think this would be abolished just intergenerational considerations, but I won't spoil that little section.
Okay. So what I wanted to go into first is just talk about the stages of development, because it's important to understand these to be able to make my argument. Mm. So obviously the first stage is conception. I mean, I feel like I'm sitting you down and explaining you, explaining the birds and bees to you, but you understand how that works. So 30 hours after conception, the cells split into two. So they're now two cells. 3 days later, the cells divide into 16 cells. Of course, they keep on dividing into multiples, obviously 2 to 4 to 8 to 16 to 32. Unsurprising, really. After two more days, the cells have migrated from the fallopian tube to the uterus or the womb. 7 days after conception, the cells burrow into the uterine lining. Once the implantation is complete, hormonal changes halt the menstrual cycle and cause a wide array of physical changes for the host woman. I'm not sure if you approve of the term host.
Not particularly. I mean, it does make mother it sound at like that point still, yeah. But yeah.
I'm using scientific language just to be, as you say, amoral. But
yeah, well,
I don't want to get into the moral
side. We know where trusting the science gets us, don't we?
Don't lump me in with them. So by the third week after conception, the neural brain tube forms, which will eventually develop into the central nervous system. Around the fourth week, the head begins to form, and then features such as eyes, nose, ears, and mouth. So the heart of the embryo starts to beat from around 5 to 6 weeks of pregnancy, which, of course,
hence
the heartbeat laws, yes. And then by 8 weeks, the embryo has all of the basic organs except the sex organs, weighs just 1 gram and is about an inch in length. And on screen at the minute is an embryo at 6 weeks, and it doesn't look particularly human from the offset, does it? It looks kind of like a shrimp, to be honest.
Yeah, but then again, in terms of definitional proofs, mm-hmm. you don't just eyeball it.
No, of course. No.
So it's perfectly fine to say, you know, this isn't going to look like the finished product. But if you fail to interfere, this will become an independent child who you can
you can't guarantee it.
No, you can't guarantee it, yes, but just like you can't guarantee every time you cross the road you won't get hit.
You have more control over that than you do this.
Sure, that's fine.
So I'm being really pedantic.
I agree, I know, but save a tragedy mm-hmm. or intervention like abortion, this will mm-hmm. develop into a full-fledged baby. But again, it comes down to the definitional proof of, is it living? Yes. Is it human? Yes. Is it innocent? Yes.
So, and the reason I brought this up is I say, okay, well, it has these things forming, but you see the eye, it doesn't even resemble a fully developed human eye. It's, dare I say, in its infancy.
Yep.
So we move on to the next picture. This is the stages of development, and it shows you all the way up to 9 months, and you get to see where exactly does it look like a baby, which to a lot of people is very important. For example, the egg and the cells, you could take a bunch of cells from any other person and put them in a microscope and it wouldn't look too different, certainly not to the untrained eye.
No.
And I'm hard-pressed to say that a bundle of cells can be regarded as a human, because you can take a bundle of cells and you could pump the right nutrients into it and keep it alive separate from the host body. Have you then cloned yourself?
No, because it's an entirely unique set of human DNA. Like, this is... Mm-hmm. No one else will exist like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
which is a perfectly reasonable point, yeah. Mm. But as you can see, things only really... You start to see a fully formed baby around the 4 to 5 months there, and that sort of bottom middle.
I don't agree, actually. From a month, that is the shape of a child. Again, we're not eyeballing it as mm-hmm. our standard, but you can definitely see how they will grow and develop from there. And
I think
no
the eyeballing it still an important aspect of it, though.
Well,
it's not going to be the important thing. Obviously, the moral questions, all of these sorts of things, are the important thing. But to be able to say, okay, well, this is a human being, this is a life, it kind of has to look like a human.
Well, yeah, to reform your subjective affective attachment to it, if you have an ultrasound of essentially nothing, it's very difficult to. But if you see a baby curled up in your stomach, of course, then you're going to feel like a parent. But that subjective attachment doesn't negate the definitional moral proof of independent human life from the kickstart. So I agree, we can contest the fact that it looks like, you know, at various stages in the first few days and weeks, a boob, but it doesn't mean that's your go-ahead to evacuate.
Mm-hmm. Well, my kind of position that I've come to is that around the 8-week mark is the sort of place where anything beyond that, I don't feel comfortable with it. I feel like there are things in the embryo's development which start to mean that it is clearly a human being. For example, before that, it doesn't have a brain whatsoever. It doesn't even have a nervous system. It's effectively, you know, it's very difficult to call something that has no nervous system. Even things like worms have nervous systems. Mm. So you need to have some benchmark for what is a human being, other than if you just say human DNA is enough, then where do you draw the line? You could, in theory, create, you know, some horrible Cronenberg monstrosity out of human DNA and say, well, that's a human being.
You would actually have an interesting question there as to personhood rights. I wouldn't disregard it.
I think that actually it's an interesting aspect to it, because if we're looking at it from the biological sense, which is mostly where my argument hinges, then these sorts of moral questions are actually important. And of course, they're also something that we're probably going to come across in our future because of, you know, the CRISPR gene editing software. Yeah. Obviously, then people aren't going to edit their genes to turn their offspring into kind of the thing.
No.
I hope not anyway.
But... No, the kid from Midsommar.
Yeah, but if you were to alter someone's genes so that it's distinctly human but slightly different, say, would they still have the same claims to a right to life as a human being? It's contingent, I would argue, on the human's intelligence, its consciousness.
Again, the bench... Okay, so there's a few arguments here, and I'm not going to rear into the religious here, but I'll be... In the same way that science has given you epistemic humility, philosophy's almost given me an err on the side of I might be wrong rather than tradition, because it might work. Mm-hmm. In terms of the consciousness argument, you run into all sorts of pitfalls there when your consciousness gets axed. And if you're on life support, for example, and your nervous system's down and you're essentially brain dead, some people have woken up from comas. We also don't understand fully how that works yet, because there are still...
But there's potential for them to get better, right?
Okay, and there's potential for this without being unimpeded to then develop into... Yeah, that's fine. So that's one argument. Without an intervention or tragedy, this will be a fully formed person.
I don't deny the argument that it has the potential to be a human life. I mean, that's self-explanatory, really, isn't it? It's obvious. I mean, from the point of the fertilized egg, it could fully develop, but then it could not as well. But the point of contention for me is, what do you regard as a human being?
I'm very uncomfortable with any attempt to define out of humanity a classification of people, because the worst people have done that, and I disagree with those philosophies. And there's also the, back on the humility point, and this is partially what won my girlfriend round to being more pro-life rather than being sort of wet on the issue, is that her and a lot of other women I've spoken to as well have this sort of sense of, I have a metaphysical consciousness. There's something spiritual about me. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't necessarily feel that, and that's part of the sort of struggle uphill I've had with religiosity, and I don't know how you as an empiricist feel about that either. I would imagine not as an agnostic. But for me, because I don't know, I would err on the side of caution. And it comes back to the analogy that I gave you in a prior podcast when we decided to do this. It's, say you run a car crushing business and you've got a wonderful, very expensive car to clamp down on, and you can sell off all the parts, and someone rushes up to you and goes, whoa, 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 there's a baby in the bonnet. And you really don't think so because you can't hear it crying. But would you check or would you flip the switch?
Since you've asked me that question for the first time,
yeah,
in which I said I'd check, I've come to realize that the situation isn't quite as comparable,
okay,
as before, because the time and cost of just going and checking in the car is so minimal compared with the moral questions involved in abortion that it's, I mean, it sets up the argument for people to agree with your position, because just going and checking, poking your head in the car, having a look, it's not really costly in terms of time and effort, and therefore it's a very different thing than the case for abortion.
Yeah, but then that's a utilitarian argument on that your life is not an objective, inviolable standpoint, which is not a very libertarian argument at all, and that instead you can make a calculus on, okay, can we kill this person based on how much time and effort they will cost us?
But I'm just saying that the analogy isn't a good conceptualization of the issue at hand.
I think it is. I think if you come from the standpoint of a life is inviolable, then the question of time and effort doesn't come into it. It's just, okay, I can't kill it because I won't flip switch because I can't know whether or not there's a person in there yet. And so until you find out either opening the hood or the baby comes out fully formed and it's crying and all okay, then you haven't committed possibly the most egregious moral crime possible. And I am not comfortable in saying, yeah, you can go ahead in case that we find out later down the line for biological or even metaphysical reasons somehow that we've been killing 60 million babies a year in the US, for example. I mean, that would just be, not a year, sorry, that's since Roe happened. But that would just be a sort of stain you couldn't ever wash out.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
From the office to a first date, there's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every situation. But clothes don't make the man. With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting and tells the world that you stay you wherever you go. They combine timeless style with modern performance materials to keep you looking good and feeling comfortable all day, no matter what's on today's agenda. Browse everything from shorts and polos to sweats and crews. Go to MacWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MAC25.